Welcome, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started. This is module four for the APR online study course in the fall session for 2017. And we've got a lot to cover tonight. We want you to sign in by naming one of the steps in the RPIE four-step process. Just type into the chat window one of the steps in the four-step process. Research. Planning, there are more. Implementation, research, evaluation, great. Evaluation, excellent. So I think we covered all of the four steps of the RPIE process: research, planning, implementation, and evaluation. And this module five and module six all cover RPIE. We do it in stages. And it is the bulk of the questions on the computer-based examination, 33%. It's also really important to that strategic thinking process for your professional practice. And that it's also to learn this, it's not just about reading and it's not just about listening, it's about doing. So that's the reason we ask you to share case problems. And we have a case problem for you tonight. And we encourage you to understand the RPIE process before trying to do, actually, that says RR, sorry to say, it should be panel presentation. Imagine that RR is a PP rather than RR. So that we also say that this represents more than 33% because you'll find that the process of communication, the process of planning in the APR is significant in the examination process. So we have a great panel with us this evening. We have Cindy Warner. Welcome, Cindy.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Really glad that you're here. And we also have Julie Fix. Welcome, Julie.
Glad to be here, Michael. Thank you.
And we have a lot to cover, and we want to get a quick little introduction from both Julie and Cindy. Julie, can you help us understand a little bit about where RPIE stands in the whole APR process?
ARP has become the sort of foundation point for our strategic planning process as we have become more aware of our need to prove to business leaders and organizational leaders that public relations can be strategic in impacting the bottom line. So by doing research, doing planning based on that research, implementing those plans, evaluating the success of our implementation while we are implementing, and then potentially changing our plan, and then evaluating the final results is critical to our being part of that strategic communication function. And the last question, I'll just jump to it. What is a fellow? A fellow in the Public Relations Society of America is someone who has 20 plus years of experience, has demonstrated leadership, professional excellence, and some degree of creativity in the practice of public relations over that 20-year or more period. And it is something that should, in all of your books, be a goal that you look toward after you become accredited.
Well, that's fantastic, Julie. Thank you so much for that. And I actually want to underline one thing that you said, which I think a lot of people don't understand, and that is that the revision process, when people do plans and they think strategically and put the planning process on paper, I find that the light bulb goes on to understand the significance of all of this happens when they go back and revise their goal, or they revise their audiences, or they revise their objectives. And I imagine that you've seen that same thing happen.
Definitely. And in fact, coincidentally, it's one of the things I taught my strategic public relations planning class this morning, that it's a situation analysis and the core statement don't match the way your plan is evolving. Go back and revise them.
Great. Excellent. Thank you so much. And we're really happy to have Julie with us. And we're also happy to have Cindy. And Cindy, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your path.
Hi, Michael. Well, my name is Cindy Warner, and I am the public relations supervisor for the Shelby County School District, and right outside of Birmingham, Alabama, a large suburban school district. And I'm a member of the National School Public Relations Association, which is a member organization of the UAB. And it was through that organization that I first became interested in becoming an APR, because the value of being an APR is certainly stressed in that particular organization. And so I became a member, just like you guys, of the online study course, and actually stuck with it for several years. My path to the APR process, I had a lot going on in my personal life at the time, with my mother being ill and some other things going on. And so it took me about 3 years from start to finish to finally achieve the goal. And so one thing that I would stress is that don't actually apply to do the APR process until you really feel that you're ready. Because, you know, once you do apply, you have that 1 year time period that's ticking. And so for me, just because I had a lot going on in my life at the time, it made me feel a little bit more comfortable to just study, and then apply to take the examination and you know, go through the formal process of application once I really felt like I was ready. So that's one tip that I have for anyone who maybe is feeling a little overwhelmed in the process, is just to take your time and to do it at your own pace, which is one of the great things about the study course. And, you know, I can vouch for the fact, Michael, that you let me keep taking the course and keep taking the course until I finally was able to do it. So,
well, I'll tell you, you know, we
good thing about the online course.
We get to a place where we get to know the people, the online candidates, even though we physically have never met face-to-face. We get this collegial kind of experience that happens, and it's really wonderful. And it's especially wonderful when people like you come back and then help others with their APR. So, Cindy, we're really, really happy that you are with us here this evening.
Thank you again for having me.
Thank you. And as we mentioned over and over again, the study guide is your primary source, but explore the short bookshelf to get more stories, more examples, more discussion about something that's just one bullet point in the study guide. You can search for it in the short bookshelf either by using the index or the table of contents, and you can find examples. And that's going to help give you context for something that you see in the study guide. We're going to jump right into what we've got, as I mentioned, a lot to cover this evening. Christina is on the line. Christina, are you there?
Hi, yes.
Great. So Christina's going to share a practice question. And Christina, we're going to ask you also to read a couple of the other questions that are in this session this evening. And remember that this is really a way to focus your attention on the readings. It's a study strategy, and also it will help you in understanding the question. So as we listen to the question tonight, we will talk about the format of the question, and we'll talk about the context of the question as well. Also, oh dear, and I skipped too quick. As you know, we have an important handout that helps you understand the way the questions were formed. Not all of the questions are scenario-based questions, but the scenario-based questions are the most difficult questions on the examination. So it's really important for you to have a good understanding of how those questions are put together, and find a way to answer those questions. So listen to this scenario this evening, consider the KSA that we're talking about, and then figure out a best practice response to that particular question. So with that, Christina, go ahead and share your question.
All right. A new computer system is being rolled out at your company. A recent employee engagement survey indicates managers and senior leaders know more about the computer system than frontline staff. As the project's communication lead, you've learned that acceptance of any new initiative goes through 5 stages. Which option correctly demonstrates the correct staged approach to engaging this key audience? So we're choosing one of these. A, credibility, context, content, clarity, channels. B, research, persuasion, content, decision, implementation. C, knowledge, persuasion, decision, implementation, confirmation. D, sanction, altruism, argument, circumvention, implementation. And option E, message catalyst, message content, message delivery, message recipient, and message evaluation.
Okay, go ahead and enter your response in the chat window, and it does ask for one response. So go ahead and enter your one response in the chat window. Okay, there's a little bit of disagreement on this particular question. And according to the author, which is Christina, it is C, knowledge, persuasion, decision, implementation, and confirmation. And would you share the rationale for that response?
Sure. It's the KSA Communication Models and Theories, and the source, the Effective Public Relations, page 301. Everett Rogers' Diffusion of Innovation Theory explains how ideas are adopted. The rationale being answer C, knowledge that people learn about an innovation and some gain interest of what it is. Persuasion, potential adopters develop interest in the innovation. They seek more, more information and consider its general merits. Decision, potential adopters' decision to adopt or reject the innovation after weighing its merits for their own institution. Implementation, those willing to try the innovation actually to it their situation, usually on a small scale. They are interested in the practice techniques and conditions for application. And confirmation, adoption is either reinforced or the decision to adopt is reversed based on the evaluation.
Okay, very good. And what we want to do, I'm sorry, I'm not doing well with the slides this evening. Julie and Cindy, I'd like to get your feedback on the question. And as you know, some of the questions on the examination are didactic and some of them are scenario-based. Cindy, do you want to sort of share whether or not the format seems to fit a question that you might find on the examination?
I think it does. I noticed that Julie had a little something over in the chat window about, you know, the fusion theory with the steps being awareness, interest, evaluation, trial, adoption, or rejection. And from what I remember of the exam, I do think that most of you know, the questions on the communication models especially will follow along pretty closely with the study guide, more so than specifics that are outlined in the book. But what I do like about this question, though, that I think is similar to the way that you'll see the questions on the exam, is that there were a couple of answers there, and you see that from the confusion between answers A and C, where, you know, they both seemed like they could be correct answers, and you really do have to kind of read the answers and know that, you know, that the answers in A are actually the, you know, the communication channels answer. So I would say that it is a fairly good question in terms of the way that you would see a question worded on the exam.
And Julie, there are some disagreement in language on the short bookshelf, and it makes it a little bit hard for what we tell people when they say, well, gosh, is awareness the same as knowledge and things of that nature. Do you have any comments about that?
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to add the FYI is because there are some overlapping terminologies. And, yeah, knowledge can't happen if you aren't aware. You can't make a decision about adoption unless you've gone through the become interested in it and then evaluated if it was something you really wanted to get involved in. And then out of trial comes the opportunity to reject or adopt. And when you look at the answers on the question, I really thought it would be helpful to say, okay, so you can broaden your mind here. And when you're answering these questions, look for that natural progression of before anyone can do anything, they have to know about it. They have to be interested in it. They have to be motivated to try it or adopt to it, and then they have to actually do the behavior of adoption. I think it's simpler when you think of it that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Excellent. Thank you so much for the feedback from both Cindy and Julie on that. And Christina, would you be willing to read the next couple of questions?
Sure. You are the PR and membership director for a nonprofit statewide hospital association. You notice that membership renewals are lagging significantly compared to previous years. It is your responsibility to maintain and grow membership for the organization. You are certain that you will be unable to meet membership goals if this trend continues. What should you do first to change the downward membership trend? And choose one. A, send a survey to current members asking for feedback and to rate the value of belonging to the association. B, talk to a few former members to try to identify the problem. C, instruct department managers to review membership contact information for errors and resend renewal applications to those who have not responded. D, create a public service campaign highlighting the benefits of membership to attract new members. Or E, devise an early renewal incentive for members to include free registration and lodging at the association's annual meeting.
Okay, go ahead and enter your response in the chat window. We've got a little bit of disagreement, but not too much. Well, actually, truth be known, I know what the answer is, and I don't see it yet. So if anybody has another response, that would be great. It looks like we have some people selecting the response. And according to the author of the question, it's talking to a few former members to identify the problem. And Christina, would you read the rationale?
The KSA would be RPI, source, EPR Chapter 11, pages 244, 245, defining PR problems. Answer B, listening to members of your audience will help to define the problem statement. The problem may lie in a relatively simple solution, i.e. membership renewals were mistakenly sent out late or have not been processed late. A situational analysis could occur after the team becomes aware of the issue. Following a situational analysis, research methods could be employed to determine why members are not renewing and then correct or creative steps devised based on membership feedback.
Excellent. And I personally like that question because each of those responses looks like something a reasonable public relations professional would do, but it's difficult to sort of figure out which one is the first one to do. Julie, do you have some comments about that question?
This is very situational, as was pointed out. And in this scenario, you don't have the benefit of some time. You need to act. You need to act quickly. A survey is certainly a proper research method to use to determine feedback from your audience. But even though surveys can be done fairly quickly, it's quicker to reach out to those people in a one-to-one conversation and assess the base of the problem and the way to correct it that way.
Great. Cindy, you have a comment?
Yeah, Michael. I mean, the thing that you mentioned that you liked the question, and I agree that it was tricky. In fact, my initial response was also A when I read it, and then I went back and reread the question. And I do think that it really points out the need, as you're taking the examination, to really carefully read what the question is asking. And when I did reread it and noticed that, you know, it was specifically talking about membership renewals, it did make sense to me at that point that you would want to reach out to former members. And so, you know, what it taught me was, you know, okay, go back and slow down and reread and see what the question is asking. And that's another, I guess, examination tip, you know, that as you're taking the examination to really carefully, you know, look at what the question is asking and then think through then at that point, okay, what is the best thing to do at, you know, at to answer the question that's being asked.
Great, Cindy. It's an excellent comment. And frankly, I teach a lot. So one of the things I like to say is that even though it's a good strategy for the examination, it's also a good strategy for professional practice, because sometimes when we quickly act on things, sometimes we can get different results. So that's great. Excellent. So we're going to move on now to some notes. And Jess, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Excellent, Jess. So we're glad that you're with us. And so we're just going to ask Jess to share her highlights on this particular topic. And it's a thick topic. RPIE has a lot of moving parts, and they're really sometimes difficult to grasp. But Jess has done a great job with the notes. And we do encourage you to take notes as well for yourself in the course. And feel free to make a presentation. You can post it in the online course, or you can share it in a cohort meeting like this one. So Jess, with that, I'd love it if you would go ahead and share your notes on situation analysis.
Great. Hi, everybody. So I just wanted to introduce myself. My name is Jessamy Brown, and I am in the public relations department at the local county hospital here in Fort Worth, Texas. And I'm an ex-newspaper reporter, and I've changed careers here. So this is a really big topic, as Michael said, so I'm going to be giving you a huge overview. And just starting with making sure that everybody remembers that RPI is a four-step process that includes research, defining the problem or opportunity, planning and programming, implementation or taking action and communicating, and then finally evaluating the program. So I'm not going to read all the slides and let y'all read it yourselves, but just noting that the first step in this process is to develop an understanding of the situation and to find out the circumstances that may have led to the problem situation or that are affecting the problem. So you can read the key questions that I've outlined there. So number two, so, you know, I think a lot of people can be intimidated by the word research because it seems kind of scientific and whatnot, but really it doesn't have to be fancy or in depth. It really is a way of just saying, you know, what do I need to know and how do I get those details? So conducting research is the first step in helping you create a communications plan that will produce strategic results to address the situation. So it's hard to argue with good data, right? It's so much easier to get buy-in from leaders and from clients if you have data and concrete information to back you up. That's that credibility that we talked about earlier for PR. So anyway, this initial research is not only the basis for strategic planning. Research provides a strong foundation of information that you can use when you evaluate at the end of the project and then get ready for your next step in your communications plan. Next slide. So you're defining the problem. Everybody remembers going back to junior high science class where you start with a hypothesis, right? What does everybody think the problem is? Is there a problem? Is there any proof that there's a problem? Or is everybody just guessing or going with their gut instinct, right? So to recognize that there is a problem, you have to start with some investigation so you can get timely, complete, and accurate information, and you're not solving the symptom instead of the actual root problem. So research helps you find out exactly what the problem situation is so you can decide what to do for your PR problem, right? So think about the facts and information you'll need to start to plan for your communications program, and that's going to help guide where you're going to go for research. Next slide, please. Yes. So under situation analysis, this is when you're going to identify and analyze the factors and the circumstances that are leading to creating or affecting the problem that you've got. So your situation analysis may summarize your research findings, your opportunities, and your concerns. It's basically putting on your detective hat or your reporter hat and doing some digging, trying to figure out what is going on. Under the key question I wrote, what positive or negative forces are operating? Who is involved? Who is affected? How are they involved? How are they affected? So the goal here is to find out everything that there is to know about whatever the situation or problem is. It's history, forces operating on it, and people affected or involved in it. Starting with internal factors, looking at what's happening inside the organization and what's happening outside the organization. So the internal, I think, is a lot easier because you're looking at stuff that you have ready access to, policies, procedures, rules, even bios of your officers, looking at what's on, you know, the website, annual reports. All the stuff is all out there, and you can just kind of go through and say, okay, what are we saying about ourselves? And moving on to external factors, that may be a little harder. It's reviewing the problem situation from outside your organization. So you're gathering all this data and information about what are we saying about ourselves, looking at how do we get here, looking at historical information, looking at stakeholders, who's involved again, how are they affected, what has been said or written about the organization in this problem. So anyway, I think I wrote, this is a detailed study of who is involved in the situation and how they are involved. And again, I'm trying to go quick and not have you read everything. So under research methods, obviously the readings go into great depth and describe these methods and also sources of information. Remember, you'll need to determine which research method is best for your communication problems and know the advantages and disadvantages and the appropriate application for the different methods. And I've listed them here, and obviously they're under our grammar, so I won't go through all of them. But I put factors to consider before you choose one is, have other parts of your organization already done research that you can use? How will you use the findings? Will you do the research by yourself, or will you hire somebody else to do it? How soon do you need this information? That will determine whether you have time to do a mail survey or whether you need to do an online survey, for example. What's your budget? What kind of staffing levels do you have? And then also, lastly, how scientific do you need the results to be? What level of confidence do you have in the data? If you're a candidate for a political office, you may want to have a really scientific poll. For other purposes, it doesn't have to be scientifically based data. It can just be a more qualitative based data. So I just touched a little bit on the SWOT analysis. Not my favorite thing to do, but it's super easy. It just looks like a grid, and then you fill in the bullet points. I think probably everybody has seen this before. It just is a specific technique. It helps you create a detailed analysis of things inside your organization and outside the organization that are affecting this problem, right? So you assess strengths and weaknesses that are internal to the organization. You identify opportunities and threats that are external to the organization. And doing this analysis helps you create a public relations plan that takes advantage of strengths and opportunities and minimizes and counters threats and weaknesses. So lastly, I'm going to just talk on problem statement. I think that that's part of our presentation for next week as well. But this is actually my favorite thing to do because it kind of summarizes everything. Problem statement just describes what you learned in your situational analysis and your research. And that communication may be part of the solution, but it's not stated as a problem. Useful problem statements are written in the present tense, describe the situation in specific and measurable terms, and do not imply a solution or place blame. Thank you. Roger, the next one were to what? Yeah. Next. Yeah, there we go. So as a former reporter, I thought, okay, if you took a journalism course in your life, you'll remember that you learned about the five W's and H, who, what, when, where, why, and how. If you can answer those questions, then you've got a good problem statement. What's the source of the concern? Where is this a problem? When is it a problem? Kind of go through all of that, and then you'll be able to put together a concise paragraph of just a sentence or two that explains what the problem is that your PR program is going to focus on. Then lastly, because I work in a hospital, I put together a healthcare-related analogy that kind of struck me one day when I was eating lunch. And just kind of looking about how our doctors in our hospital go through this same process. So from a patient's point of view, you go into the doctor and they ask, you know, what's your problem? What's happening now? What symptoms are you experiencing? And you go in and you tell them, what are you feeling? He takes your medical history. You find out all this data that you need to know. You get data from your physical exam. You get data from your lab tests. And then and only then does the doctor make a diagnosis of the problem that the subsequent treatment plan will address. It does not include elements of the treatment program, right? So that's what I kind of keep track of. And I could probably go all the way through the whole RPI process with a doctor-related visit, but I'll cut it off here. Moving on, and here are my references. So I'm hoping that this was a helpful presentation to you all. I found it really, really helpful for me to be able to synthesize what I had learned, and really, really fantastically helpful with my understanding of it. And also, just in the last several weeks, I've been trying to use the RPI process at work. That's been really helpful in just creating specific examples that I can remember and that make sense to me. And that I think is going to help me remember the process and kind of internalize the process going forward. So thanks, everyone.
Excellent, Jess. That was really good. I love the medical analogy. I thought that was fantastic. Julie, do you want to make some comments?
Well, it was a great analogy. And I think the point that Jess really made is you need to discipline yourself to follow the progressive steps. We're creative in communications, and we want to jump to those fun things like strategies and tactics, but you're not going to be successful if you don't lay this foundation to build your plan on. It requires discipline.
Excellent. Cindy?
No, I agree. She did a great job. I want to circle back just a minute to the SWOT analysis. And I feel like a lot of times that's something that we tend to, just sort of overlook. And or we do it as we are, evaluating, like if we're new to a position, for instance, and we want to do a SWOT analysis of an overall, building an overall communication plan for the company. But I think they're very important to do for each small communication plan you do as well. And I know prior to this process, it wouldn't have been something that I would have necessarily done just to launch, a regular communication plan, say for tax renewal or something like that. And in fact, it's very important to, to really do those SWOT analysis anytime you've got any type of major initiative that's coming up. And it's not something that I would have really thought to have done before this process.
Excellent, Cindy. Thank you so much. I want to sort of emphasize how Jess said that she appreciated the sort of getting the assignment to put this, to digest this topic into slides and share it, because that really is the active learning experience. And it's the reason we turn to the online candidates to prepare and to present these topics to us, because it's really about the teaching part of it is about learning about the topic as well. And so with that, we've got a case problem this evening. And remember that when we present these case problems, it's really designed to have you who are listening to actively think about what advice you would give to the presenter, what worked, what doesn't work, what would you improve, and provide those comments in the chat window. We have lots of resources for this study strategy. There are case problems, and I want to emphasize something else. I find that when people are working on an off-the-shelf case problem, they're not as invested in the planning process. They have a tendency, when you're working on a I have to say this clearly. When you're working on a project for your organization, you tend to think not about the process, but you tend to think about what other people are going to think about what you're doing. If you create a plan based on one of these off-the-shelf problems, you can see the communication process, the RPIE process, in very abstract form, which I think is a benefit. So I encourage you to take those off-the-shelf case scenarios to try this out. And also, we have lots of resources to help you go through that RPIE process, including that there are lots of different handouts, including a PowerPoint response template, which I believe, Mary Ellen, I think, did you use the template? Did you use that to help you a little bit here? Mary Ellen, are you with us? Uh-oh, if you can't speak, Mary Ellen, I'm going to send you a telephone number in the chat window. So look in the chat window, and I will send it to you right now so that you can call in. You're going to need to call in on a different number. So look in the chat window, and there's a telephone number that I put in there. I have a feeling that what happened, Mary Ellen, is you use the telephone as a viewer, and when you're presenting, we like to have you call in. So I'm hoping you'll call in right now using the number that I just sent to you. And while we are waiting for Mary Ellen to call in, Julie and Cindy, could you sort of comment on that comment that I made, whether or not you agree with me or not? I like to encourage people to do the off-the-shelf problems, mostly because I find when they do that, they seem to put together a more clearly focused planning components that are just sort of, you know, they're bare bones, but they use the components are put together correctly. When they work on a case for their organization, sometimes they have a tendency to, you know, they embellish and it looks very fancy and all this sort of thing, but they have a tendency not to hit the components well. Julie, do you have an opinion about that?
Well, all of these resources have been developed since I went through the process. I can tell you that my impression of the resources, just as an observer, is that they are well-tooled and they are designed for success. So I would agree using those off-the-shelf case scenarios and really working through them seems to be something that would enhance the chances for success on the exam.
How about you, Cindy?
I agree, and I did find that very helpful myself in taking the, and I see somebody's asking what are the off-the-shelf problems that you're referencing, and it's, you know, it's the ones that are outlined in the APR study guide and in the online course. And I found them to be very helpful. Another thing that I did was I went back to previous things that I had done. I have been in my career 15 years, and I only became an APR about 2 years ago. So I had lots of, you know, prior things that I had done prior to, you know, really understanding the process a little bit better. And so I even went back and redid, you know, plans for previous things that I had done, but I did them the correct way, if that makes sense. And so, you know, kind of going back, say, for instance, if I had a tax renewal for a property tax, for instance, that I needed to have you know, I had one that had failed miserably. And I went back and kind of redid a plan, a case study on what I had done that had failed, if that makes sense, and went back and thought through the process of what would I have done differently. And, you know, came up with a whole new, you know, communication plan that I think had I done it the correct way in the first place, it probably would have passed.
Right. Great. And you'll go ahead. Go ahead, Julie.
I was just going to say, I was going to add to that. At the time I went through the process, I had a successful experience. And when I looked at it in the frame of a strategic planning matrix, I recognized why it had succeeded. Although at the time I was winning awards on all the results, it was just sort of like, wow, you know, my instincts were really great. Well, maybe, but I had, going back and redoing it, I recognized where I had hit the elements of strategic planning. And the only thing that was really lacking was research.
So I think we have a little bit of a technical problem, and I have a feeling what I'm going to have to do, Mary Ellen, just... Okay,
poor
so
Mary Ellen.
Ellen, if you can hear us, Mary Ellen, you might want to hang up and turn the sound up on your computer so you can hear. And what we're going to do is we're going to just basically look through the situation. So the situation is the RDI is the organization that has a landfill in Bartlett, and they're going to be closing the landfill, or the state is going to be closing the Bartlett City landfill in 2 years. So the city council must find a new place for the landfill, and RDI has some land in the city near Jones Road, and so they have to get a permit to go there. And RDI is a good employer. They've although they've been cited in other states for EPA violations, and so they've tried the permitting process, and they've got some public hearings going on. It's going to take 12 months to get the permit issued or denied. And RDI would provide tax revenues, and it would offer curbside pickup for the city for 2 years for recycling and trash pickup. And then but Mrs. Johnson on Jones Road is leading an organization called CAL, which is not in my backyard, I think. And Cal has the sympathy of two of the five city council members, and Cal argues that the trash will come from other communities and states, and that Cal will say that the landfill groundwater hazard. Wait, I'm not sure what that means, but that's okay. There's a little problem with the groundwater. And the neighbors are also concerned about truck noise and devaluation of their homes. And they believe that everybody could recycle and you don't need a landfill, which is a little unrealistic. And Mary Ellen put together this great graph, which shows sort of the percentage breakdown of people who are opposed or in favor or don't know, sort of in the preliminary research stage. And she does identify informal qualitative research that she would do. And so this was Jones Road's residents were mostly opposed. The opposition diminishes at the further away you go from the site. Acceptance of the plan increases at a distance from the site. And the concern for groundwater, the main reason to oppose, RDI experts say that it has containment technology that will prevent any groundwater problems. And then she has some formal primary quantitative research, a survey that she would do, that the majority of the residents believe Bartlett City could recycle 100% of its waste, which and then no U.S. city recycles more than 40%. 25% of Bartlett City residents currently recycle. Moderately priced apartment complex is set to be built within a half mile of the landfill. So her problem statement is an organized group of Bartlett City residents is seeking to stop the construction of an RDI waste disposal facility that will leave city residents without a cost-effective waste disposal options without needed tax revenue. Now she's stating this as the situation is that she is the public relations director for RDI, for the waste disposal organization that's proposing this landfill. Her goal is, and I'm going to pause after this goal because we want people to write some suggestions for Mary Ellen. The goal is RDI will be known in Bartlett City as an environmentally sound, cost-effective waste disposal company that's a good community citizen. Help Mary Ellen. Is this a good? Do you think that's a good goal? Say, yeah, that's a great goal. Do you think it needs some work? Say it needs some work. Do you have some suggestions for how to improve the goal? Think about that, because this is part of the learning process, is to help Mary Ellen with some comments. And does Julie or Cindy want to comment on Jessamay's comment there?
It does not need a time frame. Goals do not have to be stated in measurable or time-specific terms, but it doesn't hurt to include a time frame.
Great. And then there's also an interesting comment about what do you mean by good community citizen?
Well, I mean, I think one measured? Thing... Yeah. One thing to keep in mind about a goal, and I do think that she did do a good job here, is that a goal is kind of more broad, and it typically is about a future state of being, you know, what the company, you know, wants to be known as. So I actually thought this was a pretty good goal. I had a little bit more trouble with the problem statement. I thought the problem statement that she had was a little too lengthy and kind of addressed a few things that maybe it shouldn't have.
Yeah, and it does border on the blaming issue, because one of the things we try to do in a problem statement is just sort of clearly state what the problem is. And this gets a little close to pointing the finger at the Bartlett City residents near the waste disposal
right.
facility.
Right. To me, she should have stopped with the period after facility.
Yeah, okay.
You know, the problem is that the organized group of Bartlett residents is seeking to stop the construction. But she's kind of going into, you know, a little bit more detail with the rest of the statement, in my opinion. Julie, do you agree with that?
Well, often in a problem statement, that's the problem, but I'm trying to think of a good way to phrase this. If you go back to the situation analysis, then your problem statement is the RDI needs a strategic public relations plan to counter the impact of citizens organized to oppose the landfill, or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So focusing on that, on the RPIE process in that problem statement. So the audiences that she has identified here are the regulatory agencies, the Bartlett City Council, and the residents who do not care. Any comments about the audiences, you folks listening in internet land?
When I read this, I was curious. Go ahead, Cindy.
No, I want to hear what you have to say.
I was just curious. Okay, I was just curious how the study group would respond to the choice of residents who do not care, as opposed to residents who oppose.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go ahead and answer the question because we're running short on time. That's absolutely spot on correct, because the residents who oppose have formed an opinion that is very difficult to change in the amount of time that's available to affect change. The residents who do not care are persuadable.
Yeah. And I personally would just maybe say residents who haven't formed an opinion, or residents who are undecided rather than residents who do not care.
but on her great pie chart.
Like, you know, it sounds like they will never care because they're just kind of lumps on a log, you know. Okay,
yeah,
let's go real
she's
quick.
She's staying consistent. Go ahead.
Right. So let's go to the objectives. And again, I'm going to read these objectives fairly slowly, and I want you to think of feedback that you would give to Mary Ellen if she came into your office and said, here are my objectives. RDI will be approved to move forward on building a new sanitary landfill in Bartlett City at the public hearings in 60 days. The city council will issue the permit to build RDI within the 12-month time frame. The public will see the benefits of RDI to the community. So now, in a constructive fashion, if you see an objective there that you really like, share with Mary Ellen which is the strong objective. If you see an objective there that's missing a component or needs to be tweaked, help Mary Ellen see how to tweak those. This is the opportunity for you to work together and help each other out, which is also part of the learning process. Okay, and in light of what we talked about before, Julie, in the sense that the real learning takes place when you do that revision process, do you see anything mm-hmm. in here that you would encourage her to think about in terms of revision?
Well, I think looking at the comments, lots of people have hit on it. The first two are very clearly stated, and they are measurable and time-bound. The third one, the public will see the benefits of RDI to the community. Public is that nebulous term. Public doesn't exist. We have to identify specific audiences within a public. We also don't set a quantification here of how much of our audience will see the benefits and within what kind of time frame. It goes back to what she did initially for RDI to be viewed as an environmentally friendly, or I think that was it, organization. And that's what she's referencing here, but she sort of lost the specificity that an objective needs.
Great. Cindy?
Yeah, and one thing that has kind of always helped me in terms of remembering the objectives is kind of thinking about who will do what, by when, and by how much. And then, you know, one of the things that I saw in the module itself was, you know, the some key components of an objective or the key public, the end result, the level of accomplishment, and the time frame. So even though number one and number two are correct the way she has them, I think even they could be improved a little bit, specifically, like with number one, for instance, the real objective is that you're wanting the regulators, you know, to approve the landfill. And so that could even be worded, you know, something to the effect of regulators will approve RDI requests to build a sanctuary landfill by a margin of such and such percent, if you happen to know that from research, within 60 days. So, for instance, what is the needed vote that you need? Like, how many regulatory agencies, for instance, have to approve the landfill? That could make it even more measurable, knowing that you either have a particular number or a particular percentage that it has to be passed by. Same thing with number two. You know, the city council, it was a little bit, you know, wordy, because you do at least have the public, the key public identified there of who you're wanting to do something. And then I totally agree that number three needed some work.
And I see where you're going with this, Cindy, but in the big picture, all they really want is to be approved and get the permit to build the landfill. So, you know, whether they have a 100% vote or a 75% or a 50.1% is really not significant in terms of accomplishing what they want to accomplish.
Right. Except there's one thing about this, Julie, that sort of to me is missing, and that is that I think one of the other purposes of the objectives is to see whether or not you're getting towards your goal. So the approval of the landfill is sort of ultimately that's what you really are looking for. But if you have sort of persuaded the city council, or if you have a majority of the city council that believe that all in all the plan would be a good plan. In other words, if there was an objective that sort of was an interim kind of objective that would show you you're on the right track, it seems like all of these are almost at the end of the plan, where there's nothing to see whether or not you're making any progress on the attitudes before the approval process.
And I hear what you're saying, Michael. What's here is the end game. You're saying that in a strategic planning process, maybe you have two sets of objectives, your midpoint objectives perhaps, and then your end game. But in the reality of our business, we're going for the end game most of the time. Now, we may create our objectives with touch points. So within X in 6 months, within Y in 12 months. But in this specific case, they're not dealing with this long-term window of being able to move their publics from point A to point B. It's an all out, we got to do this in 60 days kind of a thing. So you don't have much time to do midpoint checks.
Yeah. And of course, then there, and I'm going to skip through the slides because what we just talked about was the foundation of the plan. So the rest of this really just follows and follows the rest of the plan. But I was going to say actually that the objectives is one. I'm sorry, the evaluation is one place where you could put one of those mid-level kind of checks to see whether or not things are on the right track. So that's great. And we had lots of comments as we went forward here, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up. We are at the end of our time. We are going to talk about Module 5 next week, which is Goals and Objectives. And Shane Perry will be with you and Richie. And you can see that Jessamay is going to return, and Charisse and Pam will also have a case. And let's go ahead now and thank Mary Ellen for sharing with us that plan and giving us the opportunity to give her some great feedback. And Mary Ellen, I will be sending you the feedback that we received in the chat window, and you can look through that and make modifications to your plan. So I want to say good night and thank you. So thank you very much, Julie, and thank you very much, Cindy. And please do thank Julie and Cindy for being with us this evening. Thank you so much, Julie.
No, my pleasure.
I'm so glad that you were here, and thank you, Cindy, for being with us this evening.
My pleasure, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody, and we'll see you. I really wasn't doing a good job with the slides this evening. We'll see you all next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.